Radio Prague News.
The Czech Republic has drawn down a paltry 3% of available EU subsidies for energy saving schemes. Authorities are warning of increased risk of brush fires due to prolonged drought, and researchers have found that early medieval Slavs cultivated cannabis and poppies. The Czech Republic has drawn down only a tiny amount of subsidies available from Brussels to implement energy savings schemes, according to a new report by the Supreme Audit Office. As of December 31st, the country had made use of only 3% of some 850 million euros available for the years 2014 to 2020. According to the report, the Czech Republic is nowhere near meeting its goal of saving 51 petajoules worth of energy by 2020. Due to prolonged drought, the Czech Republic faces an increased risk of brush fires, especially in central Bohemia and in the northern Bohemian regions of Ústí nad Labem and Česká Lípa. In a warning issued on Monday, authorities asked people to refrain from making campfires throughout the country, noting that more blazes ignite from negligence than from natural sources, such as lightning strikes. Over the weekend, a fire broke out on forested land in Kokožin, a protected wildlife zone in central Bohemia. The Ministry of Defense plans to have dozens of specialists in cyber warfare trained by the end of this year, IHNED.cz reported on Monday. The specialists will receive instruction in how to protect websites from hackers from a Czech Israeli firm called CyberGym Europe, the news website said. The percentage of Czechs with a university education has increased significantly over the past 10 years, but still lags behind the EU average, this according to data published on Monday by the Czech Statistical Office. Last year, roughly 20% of Czechs had a university degree, up from 12.1% in 2007. In the EU, nearly 27% of people have degrees. Inhabitants of the great Moravian fortified settlement in Mikulčice, which dates back to the 8th century, cultivated cannabis and poppies, as well as peaches, pears, and nuts, this according to new research. A team from the Academy of Sciences specializing in archaebotany says a surprising number of ancient vineyards have also been uncovered in the region. Some varieties of grapes have yet to be classified and may have gone extinct. The owner of the Transgaz building in Central Europe, described by some historians as an exceptional example of brutalist architecture, has requested permission to demolish the structure. Prague 2 district authorities now have 3 weeks to respond to the request by property developer H.B. Rivas. A group of architects and preservationists had lobbied to have the Transgaz building, which is situated above Wenceslas Square and was built in the 1970s, to be classified as a cultural heritage site. And finally, the weather. Tuesday should be sunny in Bohemia, with light cloud cover mainly in Moravia. Daytime temperatures are expected to climb to 31 degrees Celsius. On Wednesday, showers and even thunderstorms are likely, especially in Vysočina and Moravia. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the news for now. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Brian Kennedy. Coming up in today's program, the tight Czech labor market is attracting young job seekers from the Mediterranean and beyond. A parliamentary investigation into the controversial privatization of the coal company OKD gets off to a rough start, and a bit later we talk to the daughter of a leader of the Prague uprising who became a marked man after the communists rose to power. All that is coming up shortly, so please do stay with us. Now, at 2.9%, the Czech unemployment rate is the lowest it has been in 22 years, and in particular, graduates have never had it easier finding work. According to the Labor Office statistics, there are currently 10 vacancies per graduate, a state of affairs that is attracting young people from countries such as Greece, Italy, and Spain to the Czech Republic. Daniela Lazareva reports.
Eurostat data suggests that 80% of graduates in the European Union find work soon after leaving school. However, not all EU member states afford good labour market opportunities for people starting out in their career. 33-year-old Josephine from Spain is a graphic designer who came to the Czech Republic on an internship in 2013 and decided to stay because there was little chance of finding work in her field of expertise at home.
I think over the last decade, the qualification levels of young people have increased, but the employment rates have fallen. So suddenly we have all these young people who cannot find a job in their work fields applying for jobs that actually don't require these high qualifications. So in the end, you just find yourself considering I should go abroad then, because I want to work for what I studied.
The Czech Republic ranks third on the European ladder as regards job opportunities for graduates. Malta is at the top, while countries such as Greece, Italy or Spain have far less to offer their graduates. As a result, many young people are looking for work further afield. Most hope to be able to return home when the situation improves. Josephine is not holding out much hope and she's uncertain as to what the future will bring.
I don't know if I will in the future, maybe after turning 60 or something. I don't know if I will stay here forever, I will move, I mean, you never know, but my plans are not in Spain.
The highest number of foreign graduates who seek work in the Czech Republic are from Greece, where the number of jobless school graduates is the highest in the European Union. Every month, 150 to 200 Greek school leavers look for work in the Czech Republic. Young Czechs leaving the country are going in search of better money or valuable experience abroad. Those who want to stay can take their pick. Labour Office data indicate that in 2017, 90% of Czech school graduates found employment in this country. In many cases, young people manage to secure a job even before graduating, either due to an internship or at the many workshops organised by firms seeking young employees fresh out of school. Some universities have set up websites at which companies looking for graduates can place job offers and internship offers. Labour Office spokesman Martin Bačkovský says the booming economy and the low unemployment means that many companies no longer require work experience.
There are currently 300,000 job vacancies on the labour market, and in the case of 70,000 job offers, lack of experience isn't considered a drawback.
Daniela Lazareva reporting. Now, a parliamentary commission has begun investigating the controversial sell-off and subsequent collapse of coal company OKD. However, that investigation has got off to a poor start, with no shows from several of the witnesses that MPs had called in for questioning. Ian Willoughby has the details.
A special parliamentary commission has been set up to look into one of the most controversial sell-offs of recent decades, the privatisation of the OKD coal mining company. It began in the 1990s and came to a conclusion in 2004. The firm later went bankrupt. 2 months ago, a court threw out charges against three men accused of undervaluing the state's asset to the tune of 5.7 billion crowns when it was sold to the company Carbon Invest for 4.1 billion crowns. Now, MPs have invited 27 witnesses to give testimony as they attempt to establish how the state came to lose control of OKD and what followed. However, commission members may find it difficult to make headway. Many former politicians and others have been invited to speak before the commission will evidently not be doing so. Former Social Democrat Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka, finance minister at the time of the sell-off, excused himself from proceedings. Zdeněk Bakala, whose RPG Industries purchased Carbon Invest just months after the sell-off, and then Social Democrat Industry Minister Milan Urban, didn't take possession of their summonses. MP Pavel Telička, who in the past worked for firms controlled by Mr. Bakala, has also refused to participate. He says this is in part because he respects the country's constitutional order.
The second reason is I didn't figure in any way at all in the privatization. At that time, I was an official in the state administration. Like any other citizen, I only have second-hand information on the privatization. In addition, I was never a member of an OKD statutory body.
However, there has been some confusion surrounding the form of Pavel Telichka's refusal. The chairman of the Investigative Commission, Lukáš Černohorský of the Czech Pirate Party, says it's unclear from a letter sent by the MEP.
We're looking into the question of whether Mr. Telichka has excused himself or is refusing to provide testimony. If it is the former, we can organize another date and time for him. If he has refused to provide testimony as a witness, it will have legal consequences for him. The aim of the commission is to investigate the whole history of the OKD case and how the fall of it came about.
The majority of the Commission members present at Monday morning's first session voted to hold their investigation in camera. When they eventually draw conclusions, the deputies will turn their findings over to the Czech law enforcement authorities.
Ian Willoughby reporting. And we stay with Ian with the sport roundup.
We begin today with football, and the new Czech top flight season got underway at the weekend, with title contenders Viktoria Plzeň, Sparta Prague and Slavia Prague all picking up 3 points straight out of the blocks. Plzeň were the first in action when they faced Dukla Prague in the capital in Friday evening's curtain raiser. The champions fell behind in the first half, but turned things around in the final quarter to eventually win 3-1. Plzeň manager Pavel Vrba said the way the game went could benefit his players in the longer run.
I remember a similar game last season against Jihlava when we turned the game around and scored to make it 2-1 in, I believe, the final minute. It's possible that today's win will help put the players at ease, but it's also a reminder that the Czech league isn't as easy as some may think.
For their part, Sparta also left it late to find the net against newcomers Opava in the capital, but in the end secured a 2-0 victory. Sparta had only won twice in 7 warm-up games, but trainer Pavel Hapal said that had little influence on the club's start to the season.
I sensed some nervousness, but around us, not in the changing room. We worked very hard in the first 3 weeks of training and were very tired in those games. We didn't choose easy opponents either. I believe there is quality in this team and that we will triumph.
Slavia Prague made the most impressive start to the new season, overpowering Olomouc 3-0 away to claim top spot in the table on goal difference. There were also wins for Bohemians 1905, Zlín and Slovan Liberec in the opening round. Athletics Now and Nikola Ogrodnikova came second in the women's javelin throw at a Diamond League athletics meeting in London at the weekend. The 27-year-old was beaten by Huihu Liu of China. Her best throw of 65.54 metres was 18 centimetres longer than the Czechs. Runner Simona Vrzalova set a new Czech women's record in the mile at the same meeting in London. She crossed the line in a time of 4:21.54 to break a record set way back in 1986. And finally, the Czech pair of Barbara Hermanova and Markéta Noš came third in the European Beach Volleyball Championships in The Hague at the weekend. They overcame a Spanish pairing in the competition's bronze medal decider. And that's all the sports news for today.
Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for One-on-One. This week, Ian Willoughby talks to Hanna Maritz, the daughter of Otakar Machtočka, a decorated leader of the Prague Uprising.
Sociologist Otakar Machotka was decorated as one of the leaders of the Prague uprising. However, as a senior member of Edvard Beneš's post-war government, he became a marked man soon after the Communist Party took power in 1948, and he and his family were forced to make a terrifying escape from Czechoslovakia. Last week, I heard all about that hazardous journey from Otakar Machotka's daughter, Hanna Maritz, who was just 3 years old in April 1948. She and her family were on a visit from the US when we spoke in Prague. Given that Hannah's parents were born around the turn of the 20th century, I was first curious to learn what they told her about some of the fascinating history they'd lived through, including the First World War.
You know, they didn't really talk about it very much. It was just part of the background. But, you know, the whole thing with Austro-Hungary and the changes and, you know, the different democratic periods and all of that was very, very hard for them. I admire that they went through all this, and I wonder how it was possible for them to go through it all. So much suffering for one lifetime.
Many people speak about the First Republic when the Czechoslovak state was founded in 1918, in that 20-year period after that, as a particularly successful period for Czechoslovakia, at least for some section of society. How did your parents speak about that period?
Well, it was a long time ago, but they, you know, when I came here in 80, I expected to find some remnant of that world, and I didn't. There was nothing left. It was a time of grace, where people spoke kindly to one another. I mean, I remember he said that he had worked in the statistics office, and a man would come every week with cash to pay people their salaries, and there was never any problem about walking around with cash to pay people. So it was a very gentle time where people were felt that life was going to be very good, that they had actually reached a pinnacle of some sort of social contract, shall we say. So they spoke about it in terms of a very golden kind of a period.
Your father was a sociologist. Did he have any specialization? I understand he founded the first marriage counseling service in Czechoslovakia.
Well, I don't know about that, but I know that he did marriage counseling in America. Yes, family was his specialty, yes.
Tell me about your father, Otakar Machotka, and World War II. How was his war?
He was a freedom fighter, so he resisted the Nazis, and he writes about it in his memoirs. There was an uprising, and they did fight against the Nazis. And I heard stories, but, you know, they didn't really talk about it all that much.
And when did your father become involved in politics?
As far as I know, it was after the war, but I don't really know. He didn't talk to me about that. He became part of the transitional government. He became the vice president of whatever that was called, the transitional government.
That was under Beneš?
Yes.
When the communists came to power, your father was one of those people who, or your family were among those people who immediately found themselves in danger. Could you tell us, please, about your family's escape from Czechoslovakia?
Well, a student came to my father and told him that he was on a list of people to be arrested and executed, and my father left immediately. We don't quite know how he got out because he never talked about it. My mother thought he took a plane, but I don't think they ever spoke about it, which is pretty amazing. And he left my mother with three children, and she died our clothing black that day, and we set out for a so-called hike in the country. So we packed rucksacks and left. I don't know, it might have been the same day, I don't know. And we traveled around for 2 weeks by train, slept in hotel lobbies, and all the while she was in contact with the party. They were trying to find her a way out. She made three attempts. The first two failed. One was because it snowed and we couldn't leave tracks. The second had to do with the person who would have been taking us across. She got a warning that this person turned people in. And then on the third try, it worked. All the borders had been closed except this one mountain in Šumava, which is called Ostri. It's the highest mountain there. And No one would take her with three children, so she found another group that would take my brother, and my brother was 11. So he went with total strangers. He must have been terrified to do that, but he did it.
And how old were you and your other sibling?
I was 3 and a half, and my sister was, she must have been eight or nine.
Do you have memories of that?
No, zero. I knew nothing about it until I heard about it. Like, I was 10 or 11 myself, I heard about it. But I have no memory at all. But it obviously had a very profound effect on me. But let me tell you about that escape. So it was a group of people and a man who knew the countryside very well. They were smugglers' paths. And there was quite a few of them, so this person knew the paths very well. And it was at night, and my mother couldn't carry me, so a student. It was a group of people, less than 12, I would say, but so this student carried me, and I met him years later. So it was cold, it was April, there was still some snow on the ground, and I know that one time when they sat down, it was so dark, she sat in a stream. Dogs were barking. There were guards, but they were able to make it up the mountain. It took most of the night. And then when they got up to the top, they didn't know where the border was. There were no markings. So that was a little bit hairy. And finally, a farmer saw them and waved them on to the German side. And then when we got to the German side, it took several days to find my father. He was already in a political person's refuge. And my brother had found him already. His people connected them. And so both of them were at this place. It was called Alaska House. It was a mansion, an old mansion. And my mother, so we hadn't eaten anything for those 3 days. And she slept in churches or I don't know what. And a student then told her where my father was. And it was a weekend, and there was a fence around the place, and she couldn't get in because the guard had orders not to let anyone in until they were, you know, they had to be screened. But he saw that we were a family, you know, through the fence. They passed us chocolates and stuff like that, and the guard let us in.
You say that this escape greatly affected you. How did it impact you?
What happens in childhood is very is the foundation of how we are in the world. I would say one of the profound effects that I feel all the time is that I forget everything. You know, this sense of forgetting constantly.
Is it the case also that years later you retraced that journey through Šumava to Germany?
We did, yes. My son and my cousin's daughter and myself. We came back about 5 years ago, and we retraced that journey. It was really wonderful to do it, to see how difficult it was, and just to be there and to complete the circle. And it was quite amazing because, well, it was very beautiful. It was summertime and there were flowers everywhere. So, but there were, you know, now it's a recreation center and people are riding their bikes and skateboards and everybody's having a good time. And so the feeling for me is we don't know what's gone on anywhere. And the whole world is full of places where dramas have played out for people. It's profound, this feeling of, well, this is such a beautiful, calm, lively place, and yet people can turn from being human beings to being something other so easily.
Tell us about your family's move to the States. I understand your dad had already been there, maybe your mom too,
yes,
in the 30s. Yes. But still, it must have been a big adjustment. They were, I guess, in their late 40s?
Yes, they were late 40s, yeah. I think it was a terrible adjustment. They had been here, yes, it was in the early 30s, yes, before the war. And my father had a lot of connections in sociology. He met with Margaret Mead and some other big sociologists. So he had connections already they traveled all around. They saw the West, which was for them a big deal. The West is much admired here. And so my father had a job almost immediately. We only spent a few months in France and then came here. He worked at the University of Chicago first and then at Cornell and then, finally this new University of the State of New York opened up in Binghamton, and he took that job. It was a good job at the time, $5,000. It was a big deal. But yes, their adjustment was very difficult. One thing was that there's a lot of suspicion post-war, and people didn't want to rent us a house. And my father finally said, what am I to do? I have children. And so finally we were able to rent, but it was difficult. And they never really adjusted them. I mean, they had excellent English skills, but it was a huge culture shock for them.
Did people suspect that they were communists or something coming from Eastern Europe?
Who knows? Probably, yeah. Well, there's a lot of post-war hysteria, you know.
Growing up in the States, how alive to you was your Czechoslovak background?
It was very alive. At that time, there were still groups of Czechs and Slovaks who got together. There used to be, there was this thing called a slet, which is where they get together and do gymnastics and stuff like that. And then there's a big cookout and with their wonderful sausages and cabbage and stuff. And so we would do that every year, that we would go to those. And my father would often speak. And little by little, those things just went away. You know, people moved on and those groups disbanded, unfortunately. I had a very close sense of culture because my parents kept it up. They spoke Czech at home and they were obviously very attached and close to it. You know, they couldn't communicate with their families. So for them, it was a way of keeping it all alive. Now I speak Czech because we spoke Czech at home, and it's very advantageous. Language is so important for keeping culture going.
Jumping forward many, many years from your childhood and youth, I understand your father's ashes were interred at the Vyšehrad Cemetery here in Prague.
Right, yes. My brother arranged that. He lives in Italy, but he comes here frequently and has many, many connections. And he arranged for my father's ashes to be brought back and for my mother's. And we just visited, the gravesite. And it's a great honor to have them here, They never returned. And my mother could have. But she was not real well at the time, and I think emotionally she would not have been able to handle it.
And how do you feel being here today?
I feel it's home to me and to my family. They all feel very much at home here. I feel like I've completed the circle, and we just love it here.
Hannah Moritz was speaking to Ian Willoughby in a feature that first aired in November. And that brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about today's content, please do get in touch. Our email address is english@radio.cz. You can also contact us on Facebook or via Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. I'm Brian Kennedy. Thanks for listening, and goodbye for now.